Team Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
The sandy-haired son of Hollywood lost his faith in all that's good. Closed the curtain, unplugged the clock, hung his clothes on the shower rod, but he never got undressed, and no, he never made a mess. It's funny how life turns out, the odds of fate, the face of doubt. Camera one closes in, the soundtrack starts, the scene begins.
Gentlemen, welcome to another edition of American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks, your host, for another hour of action-packed excitement here. As the United Nations never has a dull moment for us, the American people. Tonight is, it's May 27, 2005, ladies and gentlemen, and it's Friday. Welcome to another Friday broadcast as the weekend approaches for most. Most people get this the weekend off. Some of us don't, but that's just the way it goes. But we're happy that you're joining us tonight. A lot of information to cover, a lot of ground, a lot of territory as always, and deciding what's most important to cover and what to leave out is always a challenge. I covered this piece on a previous broadcast, and I think it's important to cover it again. The headline is Feds to Restrict Off-Road Vehicles in West. This has been going on for years, this management of land and the restriction of what can be done with it. But the very important thing that I think you need to understand here, as we're going to be talking about some private property rights here during this hour today, in part, I have some military news as well. But they say in this piece that the federal government controls 87% of the state of Nevada's land. Now, I want you to think about that, ladies and gentlemen. 87%, and that's just one state. How far advanced have we come to not having any private property rights whatsoever in this country? And, of course, I'm talking about the United States of America, as the satellite covers all of North America. But it's important to understand that we are losing the battle here. If you don't have private property rights, folks, you don't have anything in the way of liberty. And it is one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, is the changing of private property rights to public use. And I don't have the exact wording in front of me, but that is a plank of the Communist Manifesto, as we have all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto in operation today. And under the communitarian system, private property rights will take a backseat to public use. Everything private will become public under the communitarian system. You'll probably still have your toothbrush that will be private. You'll still have the clothes on your back that will be private, but all housing will be public under the communitarian system. Under the communitarian system, which is the new word for community communism, community rights will take precedent over individual rights. There will be no individual rights. And that's what you have to understand. We're here to tell you the truth, not to entertain, not to pump you up, not to make you feel good. And what would make you feel good? Nothing will make you feel better than getting involved and making a difference, educating others, and knowing that you're doing what you can to preserve what we have for future generations and to reclaim. We need to reclaim. We need to have our own Bureau of Reclamation. It's the reclamation of our property, because it's not government's. It's our property. Continuing on here, there's a lot of information. I want to get into the military some tonight. We see this is dated May 17th from the Independent out of Britain. Why is it that we have to go across the sea to get the information that we need to have? Why isn't it being promoted here? AWOL crisis hits the U.S. forces. It says, as the death toll of troops mounts in Iraq and Afghanistan, America's military recruiting figures have plummeted to an all-time low. Thousands of U.S. servicemen and women are now refusing to serve their country. Well, maybe they've started to wake up to realize that they're not, they never really were serving their country. It's a suicide mission, ladies and gentlemen. So maybe we have some servicemen and women that are waking up. Let's hope. Sergeant Kevin Benderman cannot shake the images from his head. There are bombed villages and desperate people. There are dogs eating corpses thrown into a mass grave. And most unremitting of all, there is the image of a young Iraqi girl, no more than 8 or 9, one arm severely burnt and blistered, and the sound of her screams. By the way, folks, so we're going to be posting some images. Jackie Petru has sent me a lot more images for the Want to Go to War section of SweetLiberty.org. And I believe, if I remember correctly, you can get to that section by going wantwar.sweetliberty.org. I believe that's how you get there, wantwar.sweetliberty.org. At any rate, you can go to the main page there, and under issues, there's a pull-down menu, and you can select the So You Want to Go to War section. And we already have some images posted in there about what war really is. There's a piece called This is War, an Unblinking Look. And that's that it contains pictures of people. A very brutal look. It's not for the faint of heart, but people need to understand that war is no picnic. And more and more it seems that people are waking up to the reality, including those who are fighting in these wars or expected to fight in these wars. Last January, these memories became too much for this veteran of the war in Iraq. Informed his unit was about to return. He told his commanders he wanted out and applied to be considered as a conscientious objector. The Army refused and charged him with desertion. Last week, his case, which carries a penalty of up to 7 years imprisonment, started before a military judge at Fort Stewart in Georgia. Sergeant Benderman said, quote, "If I am sincere in what I say and there's consequences because of my actions, I am prepared to stand up and take it." He says, "If I have to go to prison because I don't want to kill anybody, so be it." Unquote. And see, the point here is, even if he goes to prison, at least he'll be alive. At least he won't get his arm or leg blown off. And that's the point, ladies and gentlemen. We need more of these principled people to stand up and say no. It's not easy going against the grain. And it's easy for me to sit here and say this because I'm not in the situation. But the bottom line is, if you know that the mission is wrong, if you know that it's not a just mission, you have the moral responsibility before God to say no. And I'm talking to anybody out there who is a soldier who might happen to be listening. You see, if the global elite want to have their wars, they could have them without us. What would happen if they had a war and nobody showed up to fight it? What would happen if everyone just refused to go? What would they do? What would they do? The case of Sergeant Benderman and those others like him has focused attention on the thousands of U.S. troops who have gone AWOL, or absent without leave, since the start of President George Bush's so-called war on terror. I love the term. I love how they put the term so-called in here. That's the British press. See, America, the U.S. press, the U.S. media wouldn't have put the word so-called in there. I want to say that again. The case of Sergeant Benderman and those others like him has focused attention on the thousands of U.S. troops who have gone AWOL since the start of President George Bush's so-called war on terror. The most recent Pentagon figures suggest that there are 5,133 troops missing from duty. Of these, 2,376 are sought by the Army, 1,410 by the Navy, and 1,297 by the Marines, and 50 by the Air Force. Some have been missing for decades. But campaigners say, well, I'll bet you there's a lot more of them that have went missing recently, however. But campaigners say that the true figure could be far higher. Staff, and again, you remember that those were Pentagon figures. Campaigners say the true figure could be far higher. Staff who run a volunteer hotline to help desperate soldiers and recruits who want to get out say the number of calls has increased by 50% since 9/11. Last year alone, the GI Rights Hotline took more than 30,000 calls. At present, the hotline gets 3,000 calls a month, and the volunteers say that by the time a soldier or recruit dials the helpline, they have almost always made up their mind to get out by one means or another. Robert Dove, a Quaker who works in the Boston office of the American Friends Service Committee and one of the several volunteer groups that have operated the hotline since 1995, he says, quote, "People are calling us because there is a real problem. We do not profess to be lawyers or therapists, but we do provide both types of support," unquote. The people calling the hotline range from veterans, such as Sergeant Benderman, to recruits, such as Jeremiah Adler, an idealistic 18-year-old from Portland, Oregon, who joined the Army believing he could help change its culture. Within days of arriving for his basic training at Fort Benning, Georgia, he realized he had made a mistake. How many are like that, too? And said the Army simply wanted to turn him into a ruthless, cold-blooded killer. Mr. Adler begged to be sent home and even pretended to be gay to be discharged. Eventually, he and another recruit fled in the night and rang the hotline, which advised him to turn himself in to avoid court-martial. He will now be given an other-than-honorable discharge. Interesting. From southern Germany, where he is on a holiday before starting college in the autumn, Mr. Adler told The Independent, quote, "It was obviously a horrible experience, but now I'm glad I went through it. I was expecting to meet a whole lot of different types of people. Some had noble reasons. I also met a lot of people who wanted to kill Arabs," unquote. In one letter home to his family, Mr. Adler wrote that when he arrived, he was horrified by the things he had heard other recruits talking about. Things that in civilian life would result in someone being treated as an outcast. In another letter, he said he could hear other recruits crying at night. He said, "You can hear people trying to make sure no one hears them cry under their covers." Unbelievable. Mr. Adler now provides advice to other recruits who have decided the military is not for them. He says, quote, "When people contact me, I tell them to go AWOL. It's the quickest way to get out. I was told I would be facing 20 years hard labor at Fort Leavenworth because that is what the sergeant will tell you. I learned that that is not the case." Did you hear that, folks? He says, "I learned that that going AWOL will not necessarily make you face 20 years of hard labor at Fort Leavenworth. That's not the case." So any military listening out there, you got to take a stand in principle. And it may not be easy. It's going to cause you a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. But doing the right thing in this life, isn't always easy. They continue, they say, Jeremy Heinzman, age 26, a reservist with the 82nd Airborne Division, who served in Afghanistan, decided to go AWOL after his unit was ordered to Iraq. He took his wife and child and fled to Canada, hoping to be welcomed, as were the 50,000 or so young Americans who sought refuge north of the border to avoid the Vietnam War. But in March, he was refused refugee status by the Canadian Immigration and Refugee Board. Mr. Heinzman, who is appealing the decision, told the hearing, quote, "We were told that we would be going to Iraq to jack up some terrorists. We were told it was a new kind of war, that these were evil people, and that they had to be dealt with. We were told to consider all Arabs as potential terrorists, to foster an attitude of hatred that gets your blood boiling," unquote. Campaigners say recruits who decide that they want to leave the military are the most vulnerable to pressure from sergeants and officers who try to force them to stay. Some are told that they will go to jail. Others are told that they will never be able to get a job if they receive a less than honorable discharge, they say. They also face intense peer pressure and abuse as they try to get out and after they manage to do so. Campaigners have also drawn attention to the often scurrilous attacks used by U.S. military recruiters who, for 3 months, had failed to meet their targets for recruits. After several cases where recruiters had illegally covered up recruits' criminal and medical records, threatened one aspect with jail for failing to meet an appointment, and provided another with laxatives to help him lose weight and pass a physical, the Pentagon is halting all recruiting on the 20th of May for a day of retraining, and apparently that's already happened. Senior commanders have said the present recruiting environment with the war in Iraq having cost the lives of more than 1,600 servicemen and women, and the economy of able to offer other jobs is their most difficult. I'm not sure I understand it. Let me share that again. Senior commanders have said the present recruiting environment with the war in Iraq having cost the lives of more than 1,600 servicemen and women, and the economy able to offer other jobs is their most difficult. Okay, I read it a second time and it doesn't make any more sense than it did the first time. Despite this, the Pentagon insists it is committed to finding recruits in a fair and transparent process. Colonel Joseph Curtin, an Army spokesman, said the retraining day would give recruiters time to focus on how they can do a very tough mission without violating good order and discipline. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've already read to you what I really wanted to read. They say campaigners say that despite pressure on unhappy recruits exerted in the barracks and the insults they will likely face, if a recruit follows the correct legal procedure, they can usually get out of the military. Very important to understand. If a recruit follows the correct legal procedure, they can usually get out. One of the biggest hurdles for those who want out is obtaining the correct information on how best to proceed. Usually, the advice to those on the run is to turn themselves in. After 30 days of being AWOL, a serviceman is considered a deserter, and a warrant is issued for his arrest. At that point, he can be returned to his unit, court-martialed, or given jail time, or, and this is more often than not the outcome for recruits, they will be given a non-judicial punishment and in less than honorable discharge. Volunteers say usually the military is more inclined to let go those who have had at least the least training and are the least specialized. But an experienced Air Force pilot, for instance, in whom the military has invested hundreds of thousands of dollars, could face a much more difficult time in getting out. Ms. McNeil said, quote, "The most important thing we do is listen and not lie. Sometimes I tell people that there is nothing they can do. I don't enjoy saving it, but sometimes that is it." They say Kevin Benderman is anything but a raw recruit. He joined the U.S. Army in 1987, served in the Gulf War, and received an honorable discharge in 1991. He rejoined in 2000 and served during the invasion of Iraq with the 4th Infantry Division. He says what he saw there left him morally opposed to returning to war, and he applied to be a CO. The military says that on January 10th, he failed to show up when his unit was to ship out. So anyway, there you have it, folks. It is possible. I wouldn't have spent so much time sharing that, but I want you to understand, if you know anyone that is in the military, a loved one, a friend, anybody, let them know there is a way that they can get out. It doesn't have to be that way. And more than likely they can do it without even facing any jail time. But even if they face jail time, at least they're still going to be alive. And what's more important, ladies and gentlemen? That's what we have to look at. A court-martial, imprisonment for desertion, it's not forever. But death certainly is. I mean, losing a limb certainly is. But once you get your arm blown off, you go the rest of your life without it. If you get your leg blown off, you're going to go the rest of your life without it. And that's the way you have to look at things. Am I a pacifist? No. If we really had a just war in which the United States was really attacked, then fine. If we were really fighting for our freedom, then fine. Let's have wars. But the evidence proves overwhelming. There's overwhelming evidence that this war on terror is nothing but the globalists' plan to conquer every country that will not go along with the plan for world domination by the United Nations system. By the globalists. I forget the guy's name. Arthur Schlesinger Jr. That's what his name was. Arthur Schlesinger Jr., writing in Foreign Affairs. He said, "In defense of the world order." No, he didn't say in defense of freedom. He didn't say in defense of the representative republic that we have here in the United States of America. He said, "In defense of the world order, U.S. soldiers would have to kill and die. We are not going to achieve a world order, a new world order, without paying for it in blood as well as in words and money." Very easy for him to say. I guarantee you he has no children in the military. I guarantee you he's not going to fight the war. His family isn't going to be dying for the world order, but yours will, if you allow them. Yours will, if you put up with it. Your friends, your neighbors, your children, your sons, your daughters, your husbands, your wives, your aunts, your uncles. It's always the rich man's war and the poor man's fight. "In defense of the world order," he says, "U.S. soldiers would have to kill and die. We are not going to achieve a new world order without paying for it in blood as well as in words and money." Truer words could never be spoken. A rare truity from Arthur Schlesinger Jr., writing in July-August 1993 edition of Foreign Affairs, the flagship publication of the Council on Foreign Relations. We got to take a break here real soon, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't mean to spend so much time on that one piece. I think it's very important to stress how important it is to get out. Let's not let this go on. I got another piece here. This is typical of the local news, this local news station that I am employed at. This is typical of the coverage. And folks, I want to say, I've got nothing against soldiers. I'm in favor of saving human life. If the killing is unnecessary, and in just about all cases it is, have we ever really had an honest war? I mean, that's the question you have to ask throughout history. They say here, special tribute held for fallen soldier. This kind of stuff just tears me up. I'll share a little bit of this piece when we come back from the break, because the focus always of the media is how heroic they were because they died, when they died. And what's really a hero, in my book, if they really believe what they're doing is just, then yes, that's heroic. But what's even better? What's even better than that is standing up and doing the right thing, telling them that we're not going to kill. We're not going to do this for you. We see through your evil agenda, and we're not going to go along with it. We're going to take a stand, and we're going to not show up for your lousy war. I'm not going to kill a bunch of innocent Iraqis, a bunch of innocent Arabs, just because you say they're our enemy, because you're lying and saying that they attacked us. That's what we need, ladies and gentlemen. We need principled people to stand up on their feet and say, enough is enough. We're not going to have any more killing. We'll be back here on American Exposé. I'm Darren Wicks. As we continue on this May 26, 2005, stay with us. There's more to come on the other side of the break.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
This is Nicholas from Presence of God Ministry. Are you a believer that is looking for a way to understand Bible prophecy as it pertains to historic as well as current events? Do you believe a one-world government is predicted in the Bible to occur in our day? Do you want to know what the Bible says about the Vatican's role in all of this? Are you one that believes no prophecy of the Bible is of any personal interpretation, as 2 Peter 1:20 declares? And are you also one that understands all the symbols in prophecy are defined accurately in all the books of the Bible? If so, then you are one that would be blessed by the truth provided broadcast. Please join us on Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for an adventure in Bible prophecy. See the prophecies of old come to light in today's current events as well as historic events in our not-so-distant past. You will find information in this broadcast that will benefit you and your family like never before. So please stop by Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on FirstAmendmentRadio.com for the Truth Provided broadcast. For more information, stop by our website at www.remnantofgod.org.
Welcome back to American Exposé, ladies and gentlemen. Darren Weeks here with you in the home stretch of the broadcast. I didn't mean to spend so much time on this soldier situation, but maybe this was God's will for the broadcast tonight. Maybe there's somebody out there that might have needed to hear this, what we're doing tonight, and that's my prayer, that's my hope, that's my desire. If we can make a difference to save some lives, to inspire somebody to get out of the military while they still have life and limb. Here's a piece from the local news media, and this, like I said before the break, is typical of the media coverage. When I read pieces like this, folks, it's difficult for me to not to feel the pain of these people. And to know that the whole thing is completely senseless. It makes absolutely no sense. But here we see special tribute held for fallen soldier. This is dated May 23rd, 2005. Friends and family of a fallen mid-Michigan soldier gathered in Lansing Sunday for a special tribute. Private First Class Ricky Rosas was killed by a roadside bomb in Iraq 1 year ago this week. And with Memorial Day just around the corner, the Rosas family say, now is the perfect time to pay respect to our heroes. About 70 family members and friends showed up for the memorial to honor Rosas and other fallen soldiers, but for the Rosas family, the vigil was about more than just paying respect. It was about healing. The vigil is just one of the things the family is using to cope with Ricky's death. Apollonia Rosas, I guess that's the soldier's mother, she says, remembering the last time he was here, that we held each other. The report continues, having memories like that to share and hold on to has kept Apollonia Rosas going this past year. When her son Ricky was killed by a roadside bomb in Iraq last May 25th, he was 2 months shy. Now listen to this, folks. When he was killed, he was 2 months shy of coming home to her and the daughter he never got to meet. Apollonia Rosas said, quote, "My Lord took my son away from me, but gave me a beautiful life to look at," unquote. And it's her granddaughter, the report continues, it's her granddaughter Skylar, Rosas says, that's been the biggest comfort while dealing with losing her own child. A year old now, Skylar was born shortly before her dad was killed. Rosas says she sees so much of Ricky and his daughter, and in many ways it's like he's still here. She says everything, her smile, her eyes, her gentle touch, when she rubs her little hands on my face, I close my eyes and picture Ricky. Rosas knows her daughter is too young to remember tonight's vigil, but she'll remind her. She hopes when Skylar understands how many people continue to love and honor Ricky, it will offer Ricky's little girl the same comfort as it has his mom. She says she has boxes full of things and many stories she plans to tell Skylar as she grows up. The little girl is barely walking but can already say, "My daddy's a hero." Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't have to be this way. It's senseless. It makes absolutely no sense. How sick is it? We were told we were going into Iraq for the purpose of liberating people, for the purpose of setting people free. And yet, we have the Iraqi police state that has been implemented there in that country. And I have a piece here from a woman named Sheila Provencher from the Electronic Iraq. This is dated May 13th, 2005. And she asks the question, is this freedom? Is this freedom? She says, the air was heavy today. Cloudy, oppressive, humid in a way that Baghdad almost never is. I feel the heaviness added to the weight of the recent explosions across the country. Yesterday, Wednesday, 71 people dead in car bombs in at least three cities. She asks, can you imagine what it is like every time you set out in a car across the country to wonder if you will return? What is it like to drive down Sadoun Street and see two overturned and burned out cars in front of ruined storefronts, ravaged by the explosions? What is it like to be sitting in the Royal Jordanian Airlines office at the Palestine Hotel complex and you hear the ripping sound of the bombs, and then you see the smoke about a half mile away? She says, I feel sick, but I don't run to the bomb site because I can't do anything. I just sit there and wonder how many people are dead and pray for them and for the people who set the bombs. And at the same time, I feel glad that it wasn't me there on the street. Your mind does these things. Thank God I made it today. Thank God it wasn't me. But it was someone. I held my breath driving in a taxi with Amira and the kids today. A wedding party rode in several cars ahead of us, with young men leaning out of the cars and atop the cars, waving guns and shooting them in celebration. The police got nervous finally and stopped one of the cars and searched it. But it's too much. Too many gunshots. Too many sounds of tanks rolling in Amira's mother's neighborhood. The sound of target practice mixing with the sounds of kids laughing in the backyard playing with newly hatched ducklings and bleeding sheep. The family told me that the Americans have a base nearby and often have target practice. The constant gunfire makes it impossible for us to forget that we're in a war zone. Even when Amira's sister shows me her wedding outfits while the TV plays a Sylvester Stallone movie. Even more common now than tanks and Humvees are the pickup trucks full of Iraqi National Guard soldiers or Iraqi police who drive around randomly waving automatic weapons at cars and people. The atmosphere feels more and more like that of a police state. It is insane. Insane. Every day I feel I have to get out of here. Soldiers feel that too, she says. I asked one of them last week how long he'd been here, and he said too long. What about Iraqis? Most of them are stuck here. The only way I've found to respond to the fear is to sit still, breathe, and go deep, deep, at least once per day, and know that we are all together, really, and that my individual death would not stop this mysterious, beautiful oneness that holds us, and that we all are. When I remember that, in my body and soul, I can still hear little Huda's singing again, even as I see her looking out the taxi window at the wreckage. And I can imagine the sound of the young soldier's baby laughing, even though he is thousands of miles away. And I can be breathlessly grateful that I am here to follow what I believe, that risking friendship and common ground is the only lasting way to reach beyond the violence that we usually choose. Iraqis say all of the time, Al-Humudu al-Allah, thanks be to God for everything. I wish that we could all really see God's oneness and be free. That's Sheila Provencher writing from Iraq, asking the question, is this freedom? And it continues as they want to go into Syria, Iran, North Korea. How many others will there be, ladies and gentlemen, before people will stand up and say, we're sick and tired of you New World Order globalists trying to kill us all the time and trying to get us to kill others all of the time? The only way that I can see that the killing will ever stop, folks, is if enough good people stand on principle and say, we're not going to do it anymore. I see no other way. As now we're hearing more and more about a draft, conscription. Enough is enough. We're tired of the killing. We're not going to take the killing anymore. That's what we need. If ever there's a time to stand on principle, that is the best principle to stand upon. The principle of life. Taking a stand for life. And we are hearing so much about heroic soldiers. What's more heroic than a soldier who will stand up and say, I don't care about the shame that you try to impose upon me. I don't care about the stigmatism that you're going to try to attach to me. I don't care about anything else. I am not going to kill for the New World Order. I am not going to kill so that you can establish your globalist police state. I am going to opt out because I am a sovereign. I believe in life. I believe in freedom. And I am going to exercise my God-given freedom to say no. What better solution could there be? Now, as we have these wars going on, there's what I call the quiet war that continues in this country. And I would certainly be remiss to not cover this to some degree tonight in the waning moments of the broadcast. You folks remember Jesse Hardy? Jesse Hardy was the one with the 160 acres in Florida that the government was after. We heard recently that Jesse had settled with the government. I think it was like $5 million or something like that. Well, listen to what they've done to him. This is just unbelievable. And it's so typical. It's just incredible. Henry Lamb writes in WorldNet Daily, caught in government's vice. This is dated May 21st, 2005. He says, for years, Jesse James Hardy tried valiantly to avoid the day when the state of Florida would take his 160-acre, quote, patch of heaven, 30 miles east of Naples. He spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in engineering studies and legal fees trying to convince the state that his land was not necessary to the Everglades restoration project. The state disagreed. The court ordered one final mediation session between Jesse and the state to see if Jesse would become a, quote, willing seller rather than another victim of eminent domain. Now listen to this, folks. The courts had already taken the land of nearly 17,000 landowners. The courts had already taken the land of nearly 17,000 other landowners. And yet, our soldiers are dying for freedom, aren't they? Our soldiers are fighting wars because we're spreading freedom around the world. I say it so often, I sound like a broken record, but if you have not private property rights, you have no freedom. You have no means of production. Without the ability to own and control land, you have no ability to control your own destiny. And the government, according to the Associated Press, already controls 87% of the state of Nevada. That's one state. Here we see in Florida, the government's taken 17,000 other landowners for one project, the Everglades Restoration Project. How many other projects have there been in Florida? How many thousands of acres have been swallowed up in Florida? Now, Jesse was the last holdout in the 55,000-acre parcel that lies 50 miles from the Everglades. Jesse was accompanied by two attorneys, one of whom had filed an extensive lawsuit on Jesse's behalf, alleging a variety of illegal actions on the part of the state and federal agencies. The other attorney was an eminent domain specialist. One attorney advised, "We can win this, Jesse, if you just hang on." Of course, there was no guarantee that Jesse would win, and the case, filed in federal court, could take years. But listen to this. Jesse's only income, besides a small disability check he receives from the military, this is how they rewarded him for his military service. He received a disability check. His only other income was the sale of dirt from the excavation of what he planned to be four 20-acre fishing lakes he was building on his property. Collier County approved the four-lake plan 3 years ago, but after the state declared it wanted the land, the state asked the county to withdraw the permit. The county complied and refused to renew Jesse's permit, leaving him with no source of income or any hope of completing his dream. There was no way Jesse could hang on for the years it would take for a final decision on his lawsuit. The state had offered Jesse as much as $27,500 per acre for his land. But when Jesse looked around, now that sounds like a lot, but listen, but when Jesse looked around the area for a comparable land, prices ranged from $50,000 to $100,000 per acre. He could not replace his land for the price the state offered. In other words, it was worth a whole lot more than they were offering. The other attorney pointed out to Jesse that there was no doubt the court would take the land. The only question was the amount of, quote, just compensation the court would pay, and the decision would be made by a jury, not of Jesse's peers, but jurors selected from affluent retirees. For years, local media had portrayed Jesse as a stubborn hermit, living in a shack in a wilderness, who is blocking the all-important Everglades restoration project. A jury would not likely be sympathetic with Jesse's values. The marathon negotiation session lasted until 10:30 p.m. when Jesse finally became a quote-unquote willing seller. He agreed to accept $4.95 million, about $31,000 per acre. He has to vacate the property by December 1st. Now, listen to this, because this is the clincher here, ladies and gentlemen. What's been reported about this case is that Jesse settled for $4.95 million. So you're thinking, okay, well, he lost his land, but at least he has the $4.95 million. At least he's set for life, right? Wrong. The money was not paid to Jesse, but it was paid to the court to ensure that the all outstanding claims against Jesse would be paid. Claims are being filed that Jesse says he does not owe. The money is tied up, and the judge has scheduled a hearing for June 26th. In the meantime, Jesse has no resources to arrange for another place to live. Is this incredible or what? He doesn't even know how much will be left or when it will be available. Prior to that settlement, the county would not allow Jesse to sell the dirt from his excavations after his permit expired last year. Now, however, by arrangement with the state, the county is allowing a contractor to haul away the dirt. Well, at least he can get his dirt out of there. But Jesse is understandably angry. He watched the county, state, and federal governments conspire to deprive him of his home and his dreams for the future. The price at which he became a, quote, willing seller is well below replacement costs, but above the amount he would likely have gotten from a jury or a court decree. Jesse is just another victim of government's relentless quest to acquire private property. There are similar cases in progress in virtually every state, Henry Lamb says, which do not get the publicity Jesse has generated. Once government gets private property in its crosshairs, few people have the money, the time, or the expertise to mount a defense. The entire saga of Jesse's years-long battle is recorded at his website, and that website, ladies and gentlemen, is jessehardy.com. JesseHardy.com. We have the ability to make a difference. And knowing, being a part of the remnant that knows the truth and understands the problem, we have the unique responsibility to act upon that truth that we have. For we have been given a very precious gift. We have been trusted to be stewards of the real truth that God has. And so many have blinders on in this day and age. And we have had our blinders removed for a reason and for a purpose. And that responsibility weighs upon me every single day. Here we see from John Hamill. Now we know most Freemasons are regular law-abiding, decent, and responsible citizens, so I guess it's logical that they be involved in a national database program called CHIP, right? To collect children's fingerprints, toothprints, DNA, and videos and photos. He says it's apparently to protect kids from abductions. Now, folks, I will say this. There are many people who are Masons that don't understand what they're a part of. I would say the vast majority of Freemasons do not understand what they're a part of. But this is a case where the Nebraska Grand Lodge is implementing a identification program for children. And it's called CHIP. Isn't that interesting? John Hamill writes, "Would I be called a conspiracy theorist if I suggested that there was some sinister link between the acronym CHIP, C-H-I-P, and human databases? We already know that there is an implantable data chip produced by VeriChip, so it sounds like they want to get kids used to the linkage between C-H-I-P and personal data and personal safety. Ironically, this initiative appears to come out of Nebraska, a notorious center of cultic child abuse documented by former Nebraska Senator John W. DeCamp. The Codex Vitamin issue is just one, just the tip of a much larger iceberg, unfortunately. We're up against a genocide eugenics agenda, and all sorts of stuff is being done to manufacture consent for the microchipping of the population. In Mexico, it's happening very quickly due to all of the kidnappings there. Many government officials have been chipped for ostensible protection, quote-unquote. And via the CAFTA and FTAA, they intend to bring chipping of the population in here with programs like CHIP to get us acclimated to the idea." And he gives the website for the Nebraska Grand Lodge. And it's kind of a lengthy website. I want you folks to know that I'll probably post this on the website at AmericanExpose.com. That's the best way to do this. They say the Child Identification Program, or CHIP, addresses the alarming fact, and this is the Masons that are doing this. It addresses the fact, the alarming fact, that over 1 million children are reported missing in the United States each year. In Nebraska, over 5,000 children were reported missing in the year 2000. While most are found, many are not. Also, the abduction of children is both underreported and rapidly increasing in our society. The CHIP kit includes the following. Videotape, a brief videotape interview, is worth 1,000 still photos. The CHIP interview captures the appearance, speech, mannerisms, and other important personal characteristics of a child. It can be quickly distributed via the media to reach a huge audience. It is the cornerstone of CHIP. Then he says fingerprinting. Fingerprinting is a well-known means of identification. Everyone's prints are unique. Resourceful parents keep fingerprints available should the need arise. Toothprints. Toothprints bite impression is quick and easy. Teeth like fingerprints are unique. Even in a child who is losing and gaining teeth, a dental imprint gives both accurate and important information for identification purposes. Saliva on the tooth print also serves as a DNA sample for at least 3 years, but more importantly, serves as a scent tracer for recovery bloodhound dogs that can easily track the saliva scent. DNA cheek swab. The cheek swab provides DNA material for both mitochondrial and nuclear DNA matching for more than 20 years when properly frozen in a home freezer. Digital still photograph. A digital still photograph is printed for use in the Amber Alert system or if needed by other proper authorities. Only the parent or guardian receives the print. No photos or files are retained by the Freemasons or other sponsoring organizations. The Masonic CHIP kit is the most comprehensive service of its kind anywhere. CHIP is provided at no charge to the public. Of course not. And all of the identifying items generated during CHIP are given to the child's family. For more information about CHIP, contact the Grand Lodge of Masons in Nebraska. And they give the address P.O. Box 81852, Lincoln, Nebraska 68501. Telephone 800-558-8029. You know, maybe you should call that number and tell them how you feel about identifying children. 800-558-8029 is the Nebraska Grand Lodge's toll-free telephone number. They also have a toll number here, 402-475-4640. 402-475-4640. All of these identification programs are being promoted as something that is for the purpose of protecting. Homeland Security is being promoted as a means of protecting the public. And ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. I thank you for joining me. Kind of a different kind of broadcast tonight, but maybe a necessary one. I don't know. Join me again Monday, and I'll be back. God bless you, and good night, ladies and gentlemen.
When you turn and find that you're all alone, and the velvet wall at night moves in, wraps around you like a wall of stone. Just when your final prayer has flown, love will get there. When a mother's touch is far away, you close your eyes and you hear a voice whispering, it'll be okay. Just hold on for one more day.
That's the sound of nearly 3 million American jobs.